Krishna began speaking the Bhagavad Gita after explaining the table of contents of the Gita in chapter 2. He explained Karma Yoga in chapter 3. This Karma Yoga was explained as working in a renounced spirit, gradually detaching oneself from the fruit of one's work, till one, through detachment and the increase of transcendental knowledge, one comes to the platform of goodness. And on this platform of goodness, one is performing what we call nishkam karma, or karma or work without any desire for the fruit of one's work. Nishkam karma. And if one is working without the desire for fruit, what is his reason for working? And the reason, given in the third chapter, is to set a good example for others. Yadya racharati sreshtas. So when one is on the platform of knowledge, when one is on the platform of the mode of goodness, when one is on the platform of detachment, one still works, and his goal is to set an example for others, how to work without attachment. Because it is the attachment to the fruit of the work that binds us to the material world. It is not the work itself, but it is the attachment that binds us to the material world. Because that attachment, born of the mode of passion, is based in the desire to enjoy. It focuses us in the consciousness as of the bhokta. And here, in the material world, we have to give up the desire to be the enjoyer. If we wish to be the enjoyer, we have to stay in the material world. We have to stay in the material world. So there is a scientific process of yoga, of Krishna consciousness, which works with our consciousness, which is currently in the material world, in the mood of enjoyer, and gradually purifies it to the point where we give up the mood of enjoyment, thinking that everything that we see is meant for us to squeeze pleasure from. That we are the center, and that which exists is meant for our pleasure. We have to remove this consciousness, this consciousness of I am the enjoyer, from our heart. And this is the process of yoga. It's a gradual process. So therefore there are many steps in the yoga ladder, the ladder to perfection. The first step is that we accept the authority of the Vedic scriptures and don't try to enjoy according to our own whim and doing whatever we like just because we feel like it. This is the rationale or the reason why everyone acts in the material world. Because I feel like it. I like it. I want to do it. Why? Because no reason other than I think it is good for me and I don't care. So this consciousness is removed by one step when one accepts the Vedic scriptures, the Shastra, as his standard and method of enjoyment. Then, when one removes the goal from his heart of enjoyment, even though one may be attached, but one establishes Krishna as the goal, then it becomes yoga. And even if one is attached, it is sakam. Karma Yoga. Then, when one is attached, he starts giving the fruit of his work to Krishna. And by giving the fruit of his work to Krishna and associating with those who know the science of Krishna consciousness, gradually he gets transcendental knowledge. Gradually he attains a higher taste by giving to Krishna, because that taste is sweeter, much, much sweeter than trying to squeeze enjoyment from the material world. It is a step towards becoming a servant to Krishna. So gradually, even though one may have his material desires, one gradually attains knowledge, moves up from the platform of passion to the platform of goodness, and in that way he advances in Krishna consciousness to the point of nishkam, where he is working but with no desire for material enjoyment. This, such a person situated in the mode of goodness in transcendental knowledge, is very rare in this world. He is detached from his work, from the fruit of his work. And if he is not only detached, but he is attached to Krishna, he will offer the fruit of his work at the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. Then, in the fourth chapter, what is the title of the fourth chapter? Transcendental knowledge. Because that transcendental knowledge makes the difference between passion and goodness, or elevates one in spiritual life. The more knowledge we have, knowledge of the nature of the material world, knowledge of that we are not our body, knowledge that we are souls, knowledge that Krishna is the supreme soul, the Paramatma, knowledge how time is mixing and all our karma within the material world, and what happens to us is just interactions of the modes of material nature according to our karma and time, material world, Krishna, Jiva, and the relationship between Krishna and the Jiva. This is all transcendental knowledge. So this is explained in the fourth chapter, because it is this knowledge, having this knowledge, is the most valuable gift. Why is it so valuable? Because this knowledge will free us from death. As Prabhupada would sometimes say, make this death your last death. So this knowledge is so valuable. It will free us from death. In medical science, they spend billions of dollars each year trying to free people from death and disease and old age. This knowledge will do it. So it is so valuable. So how is it received? Imam parampara praptam, imam rajasyo vibhu. It is received through the disciplic succession, beginning with Brahma, and coming down through so many thousands and millions of years, coming by the mercy of Madhavendra Puri, coming to Ishwara Puri, coming through Mahaprabhu himself. Then, after Mahaprabhu, who was there? I'm getting all confused. After Mahaprabhu. There is Sarup, there is Rupa, there is Gadarha, there is Advaita, yes? Sitanam. So there are so many exalted associates of Mahaprabhu, and then the Goswamis, and then beginning with Rupa and Sanatan, then coming down to Raghunath Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Narottama Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Vidyabhusan, Jagannath Das, Bhaktivinod Thakur, Gokushor Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's disciples, and on and on and on. This is how the knowledge should be received, in an unbroken, unchanged chain. If we hear in this way, it will affect our heart, especially if we are receptive and we are desiring to get out of this material world. If we understand the nature of the material world, any intelligent person will wish to get out, because it is not possible to be happy here. Now imagine any situation. We all have a dream tucked away in some part of our mind where we think that if I have this dream, then I'll be happy. If I was, right now, it's if I would be in a cool air-conditioned room. Yes, what?
No flies.
No flies, etc. No boils, no flies, etc., etc., or even bigger. And if I was the king of an air-conditioned country and everyone was just serving me, and I had 100 millions of people removing the flies and bringing me grapes and peeling them. Sounds good, Nandu? Not bad, huh? And I'd have Nandu coming to me every day. So everyone has a dream of what would make them happy. But take that dream and imagine it. I once, in a writing exercise, I was teaching one boy, Dianetti, and he wrote this essay that how on the during the summer vacation he went to, I think it's called Water World or something. What's that thing where they have the slides? In the West they have these with the water slides. What's it, Water World? You ever seen? They have these huge slides that go round and round, and water comes, huh?
Wet and Wild.
Wet and Wild, Water World. These huge slides that water comes down, and you end up and then going into a pool of water. Great, huh? So, and all this. Anyway, Dianetti wrote this essay of how about a boy. He wrote it about how he really liked going there this summer. So as a Gurukula teacher, first I thought, why is he writing this Maya? I should immediately chastise him and preach to him. And then I thought, Krishna gave me some intelligence. And I thought, Dianetti, I said to him, why don't you continue the story about and write about a boy who liked Wet and Wonderful Water World so much that he decided that he never wanted to leave. What happened to him? So he thought that was a good idea, and he started writing about this boy who liked it so much, and he was going down the slides, and then he became so expert, he decided never to leave, and there was an Olympic championship held at that water world, and he became the Olympic champion of going down the water slides, and it was so glorious, and it was so nice. And then one day as he was going down, he cracked his head on the bottom of the pool and died and ended up a penguin swimming in the water somewhere. And then, because all stories must have good endings, then as he was swimming somewhere in the ocean, a boat came along full of devotees chanting Hare Krishna. And then somehow he got aboard or something and they... Head of Sampasana, overboard or something, and then his next life he went back home, back to God. That easy, huh? But in any case, there is no situation, even if you become the Olympic champion at sliding down the water pond, you cannot be happy because you will crack your head and end up a penguin. Or something or another. The material nature is especially built to make sure that you cannot be happy in this world. And even if you find a situation wherein you can be happy and you like it so much that you never want to leave, you will still be kicked out by the form of death. So this is the nature of the material world. So because of this heavy mode of passion, and since Krishna bulise jeev anadi bahi mukh, because we have been in this material world forever and ever and ever, and we have this desire, we say that determination is such a good thing. So we have that determination. We will enjoy in this material world, even though I've tried so many unlimited, countless billions of times, and I have suffered. I will try one more time. We are so determined at this attempt to be happy in the material world. So, an intelligent person understands that it's simply the mode of passion If he had knowledge born of the mode of goodness, given the gift of the Bhagavad Gita and Guru and Vaishnavas, if he had knowledge, it's clear that the material world is meant for suffering. It is not meant for enjoyment. It is clear. We want to get enjoyment from this body. We try so hard in every way to get enjoyment from the body, but it is meant for suffering. And what is my example for that? Remember the example of the big toe. Remember that one? Just imagine how much pleasure you can get from your big toe. You can, I mean, it's hard to imagine actually. But then if you smash your toe with a hammer, just imagine how much suffering you can get from it. Every bit of our body is like that. There's a thin pleasure coating on it, but it is mostly meant for suffering. The amount of suffering that we can get from our body is unlimited, and the amount of pleasure we can get is temporary and limited. So an intelligent person understands, yes, I have the desire to enjoy myself, okay. But it is foolish. So let me get knowledge and let me try to get out. So the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita teaches us transcendental knowledge, the beginning of transcendental knowledge about Krishna, how powerful this knowledge is. It burns to ashes all the results of sinful activities which bind us to the material world. Fourth chapter. Then the fifth chapter explains again that we should work and work and work until we should just work. Actually, we should not give up work, even though we don't want to enjoy in the material world. We should nevertheless not give up work. And then by working without attachment, nishkam kama, by working in that way, we get knowledge. What is that knowledge that we get? That we are not our body, that we are souls. That knowledge frees us from all our illusory attempts to be happy. We try so hard to be happy and then we get disease. And then we cure the disease thinking, oh, now I can be happy. Prabhupada compares the happiness in the material world to, at least there was once a punishment system in the colonial United States, colonial America. I don't know if they must have had it in other parts of the world, where they would take a chair on a big, big bamboo pole or something like that, and they put a rock over here, and they tie someone to the chair who was being punished. They would tie him so he couldn't move. They put a chair on the end of a bamboo pole, tie a person in, and put him over a pond of water. And you know what they would do? Lower him into the water. So this end stood up. This part was here, right? And he was in the water. And they would keep him underwater as a punishment. And keep him underwater. And keep him underwater just until he was about to die. And then they'd push down and pick him up. And he'd go... And then... Back down underwater. Just so much suffering. And then... So that is material pleasure. We're suffering, 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 and then for a second we can breathe. And we're thinking, and just before we go down again for more suffering, we're thinking, oh, how wonderful it is, I can breathe. Isn't this wonderful? What a pleasure. Life. But material life actually means suffering. So, when one understands that he's a soul, not theoretically, but one actually realizes this and is living in that consciousness, then for him there is no suffering at all. He is living as if in a city. When we enter the city, we don't become one with that city. We are in it. So similarly, a person who has knowledge lives happily in the city of nine gates, this material body. Completely aloof, completely detached, not thinking that he is causing action, Just seeing the modes of material nature acting, reacting, acting, reacting. Then, from that point of knowledge, that point of knowledge born of the mode of goodness, when he focuses on the super soul, which is beyond knowledge that he can attain just from cultivating a mode of goodness, beyond knowledge that he can attain from nishkam karma or detached work, knowledge of the super soul, which must come in a descending knowledge, then he becomes actually liberated. In the sixth chapter, it describes how to attain that same liberated platform through Ashtanga Yoga. In Ashtanga Yoga, we also don't give up work till what stage? Yoga Rudra stage, a very advanced stage. And then, by practicing the very difficult process of Ashtanga Yoga, one comes to focus on the self and the super soul, and such a yogi is very great, very, very great. And gradually, he understands the super soul, and then the topmost yogi, Madgaten Antaratmanam. What is the beginning of the verse? Yogi Namapi Sarvesham. Of all yogis. Madgaten Antaratmanam. One who is always meditating on me, Shradavan, with full faith, Bhajateyo Mam, and worshipping me, not just meditating, but serving me with devotion and love. Same Yuktatama Mata. He is the best of yogis. Practically he's a different class of yogis than the one just meditating on the super soul. And Krishna says, Madgaten Antaratmanam. Krishna is me, he's saying me, meditating on me. He is standing right before Arjuna with two hands, with lotus eyes, with a complexion like a fresh monsoon cloud. So beautiful, with curling hair. Every aspect of him is beautiful, reddish. Palms, fingers like lotuses, cheeks like moons, so many moons and lotuses, fingernails like moons, the lotus toes, feet, so beautiful. So he, Krishna is saying, Madgaten, meditating on me within. So he's talking about himself. He is the best yogi. So that brings it from the point of Vedanti Tatvadas Tatvam Yajnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti. It brings it from the point of Paramatma to the point of Bhagavan. Now, the seventh chapter begins the middle six chapters, which are different, have a different focus than the first six chapters. The first six chapters speak about jnana and karma, which are needed to purify one's heart. Now 7 to 12 speaks about devotional service, which is jnana, karma, anavritta. Jnana and karma, devotional service, free from any desire for jnana, to get knowledge that we are not our body, and free from any desire for karma or fruit of work. It is bhakti. It is anukulena Krishna anushivana bhakti uttama. So Krishna is going to describe in 7 through 12 more knowledge, better knowledge that does not spring from the mode of goodness. What knowledge springs from the mode of goodness? Knowledge that we are not our body. But knowledge about Krishna is beyond the mode of goodness. It does not come from any of the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature are in this world, but knowledge about Krishna is beyond this world. It must enter this world. It must enter this world through Shastra. Krishna's Srup Shakti must enter through Shastra, Guru, Guru Parampara, like that. It is the internal energy of the Lord, this knowledge. Chit Shakti. So the first verse. Sri Bhagavan Uvatsya. Maya Shakta Manaparta Yogam Yunjan Marashraya Asamsayam Samagramam Yatta Gigyasi Tatschunu. So without being asked, Krishna has ended the last verse, the last chapter with Madgatein Antaratmanam. He's describing the topmost yogi, Yoginam Api Sarvesham, who's always thinking of him within and with his Shraddhavan. Avan means the possessor of Shraddha. He possesses great faith and he is always worshipping him and thinking of him within. So without being asked by Arjuna, Krishna is so enthusiastic. He's going to begin to explain this Madgatein Antaratmanam yogi who is in a class by himself and how to become that sort of a person who always thinks of Krishna within. And to do this, as the chapter title says, that one needs knowledge of the Absolute. So this verse, Maya Shakta Manaparta, a Shakti, what does a Shakti mean? There's one stage that Srila Rupa Goswami describes. What does a Shakti mean? It comes after Ruchi and before Bhava. Attachment, yes. So Maya Shakt Manaparta. Mana, what does mana mean? Mind. And Mai means unto me. So with your mind attached to me, Yogam Yunjan Marashraya means by practicing yoga in full consciousness, with mind attached to me. This means beyond ruchi, after one gets a taste for Krishna, one's mind must become attached to Krishna. This is the stage prior to developing love for Krishna. And this comes by hearing and by good association. One becomes attached to Krishna. Right now, our attachment is to Maya, to the cause of the motive passion. We are attached to the elements of the material world because we want to enjoy. But here, Maya Shakta Mana Parta, that our mind must become attached to Krishna. By practicing yoga in full consciousness of Krishna, asamsayam samagram mam. Asamsayam means without a doubt. Samagram mam yata gigyasi means, samagram means you can know me completely. Samagram means completely. So without a doubt, you can know me completely. Tatstrinu, by this process of hearing. Just hear from me, Krishna is saying. Now hear, O son of Prita, O Partha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, that means that our consciousness has to be full of Krishna. And how could our consciousness be full of Krishna if we are attached to so many things other than Krishna? It is not possible, because whatever our consciousness is attached to, we will focus our consciousness on that. So here, Krishna is describing how to practice yoga in full consciousness of Him. He's giving that knowledge which will allow us to have full consciousness of Him and with mind attached to Him, because as soon as one hears about Krishna, one becomes attached to Krishna, because Krishna is so glorious. And then the result of that is one will know Krishna, is knowledge. One will know Krishna in full, free from doubt. Of course, it is not possible to know Krishna in full, completely, because He is beyond anyone. Anyone to know completely. But it means one should keep on trying to know more and more and more about Krishna. One cannot know Krishna completely. So it is, Lord Ananta, Sesha, chants the glories of Krishna for unlimited time with unlimited mouths, and he cannot reach the end of Krishna's glories. So it is not possible to know Krishna completely. But if we try, if we make that our ambition, then we will be fully engaged always. So one should not give up trying. So again, Krishna says, Tat Trinu, because this process of knowing Krishna has nothing to do with the three modes of material nature. One must hear from Krishna or his representative to get this knowledge that he sends into the world. So therefore, by hearing Golokera Premadana, Harinama Sankirtana. What's the next line? Rati na Tamilo Kenota. Is that line or does that come later? Huh? Ratina means that although this transcendental sound vibration descends from Goloka Vrindavan, unfortunately, I have no taste for it. This is Mahaprabhu was also chanted like that. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material, spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but there is no other way, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravana is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tat Trinu, or hear from me. So this hearing process is so important. It will give us advancement. If we just hear properly, we will become more advanced. We will become attached to Krishna. So therefore it is worthwhile to make sacrifices to hear about Krishna. Because what else is there to gain in this world except attachment to Krishna? What else is worthwhile to gain? Can we really gain health in this world? Who will live and remain healthy for more than 600 or 700 years? Only Jalandhar. Maybe. Maybe not. Yes, why not? Well, not more anyway. Maybe less. No, we can't. We can't. What can we gain in this world? This whole material world, its purpose is only to give us a chance to make advancement in Krishna consciousness so the sadhakas can become siddhas. That is why Krishna keeps this world, material world, going. So we can make advancement. It is His mercy. So we can make advancement and attain His lotus feet. So we should become serious about hearing. One or another, get enough of a taste to become serious about hearing. We are very fortunate. And we should cultivate that taste very carefully. We should regard it as Krishna's special gift. It does not come easily in this world. It is Krishna's mercy. If we somehow or another have a taste for hearing, we should fence it from offenses, and we should guard it from wild elephants and other animals. That taste is the budding creeper of our devotional service. So we should be we should not take it for granted. We should cultivate it. If somehow or another, by Krishna's grace, even if it is very slight and tender, if we take care of it by more hearing, it will grow and flourish. So what will we hear about in this seventh chapter? Of course, Krishna has already said that he's going to explain this verse. The first verse explains how, continuing from the last verse of the sixth chapter, one can actually practice this yoga with full consciousness and mind attached to him, as he's explained, Madgatena Antaratmanam. So we're going to hear about Krishna, how to always see Krishna, what Krishna's position in, who surrenders to Krishna, who doesn't, why those who don't surrender to Krishna, why they don't surrender, and what are the benefits of surrendering to Krishna. So we're going to hear so much knowledge that is directly about Krishna. Any questions or comments?
We discussed before that Nishkam Karma is also performed by impersonalists.
Yes.
So, what? Can a person perform Nishkam Karma without hearing, without being attached to Krishna?
Yeah.
What is this?
His attachment is to getting free from material miseries. You can perform Nishkam Karma only means you're working without any fruit of desire. One can do it just on the mode of goodness level, thinking that he is Brahman. One can do it just dutifully. I'm just doing my duty, I don't care about the results. There are many people like that, even today.
There's some.
Little. But that means there's some contamination of the mode of passion, which is always there in the material world. But in the mode of goodness, generally, if one has the desire to be an impersonalist, to merge with Brahman, you're doing it with the desire to merge with Brahman. So you're hearing about in Brahman, everything, there is great peace. It is very nice. It is so peaceful. There is no misery. It is all negative conception. But by hearing, that's what the impersonalists say. Just hear. Just keep on hearing. Just keep on hearing. Just keep on hearing.
This word, asasyam,
without a doubt.
Then would it be correct to say that that actually places the Bhagavad Gita over any other scripture? Because one of the world's greatest religions, they say that the most important aspect is faith. And they actually say that you cannot know God.
We also say that.
Yeah, but they say you have to accept God on faith.
We also say that you have to have faith.
But he says you know God without a doubt.
Yeah, but that's if you have faith. You know him without doubt. It's just said in 6 points. Shradavan, Vajate Yomam.
Yeah, but.
There's a certain creature who inhabits, especially the colder regions of the planet. They're called yabbits.
What's that?
They go, whatever you say, they go, yeah, but. Something like, but it's a yabbit. In the last verse, it said, "Yogi namapi savesham madgitenantara shradavan." And one's advancement is measured by his faith, but faith isn't just blind; it's realized knowledge.
But would it be correct to say that shraddha transforms into vijnan? It becomes without a doubt. I mean, you don't have to believe when it's without a doubt. There is without a doubt. There's nothing more to believe.
But you have to have faith to believe without a doubt.
Yeah, but when you know.
Yeah, but see, I told you.
Yes.
It's different dialects they speak sometimes. Yeah, but.
But when you know.
Anyway, this is a very esoteric point. That
I just think it's kind of nice.
He says that a lot of times. Mam evyasasiya samsaya. He says that you will come to me without a doubt. He says that many, many times. But you only accept that and become inspired by that. Krishna's telling me, if I do this, I'm going to come to him without a doubt. If you have full faith in him. And if you don't have faith, you'll think, what happens if he's only joking, or he's just trying to encourage me, or if he's not really real, or he doesn't have this, or this. Right? So for the faithless person, Ashradavan, budget, Ashradanas, what's the verse? Ashradadanasya Dhamasya. Purusha Dhammas Yasya Prantam Apraptyamam Navartante Mrityu Samsara. Ashradadana Purusha. If you're a Purusha person who is Ashrada, you have no faith. Dhammas Yasya Apraptyamam. Aprapya means you obtain. Aprapya means you don't obtain. Apraptyamam Navartante. But what happens? You don't attain my abode, but Mrityu samsara vartmani, you retain death and continued birth and death. So faith, where does faith come from? It is not a bad thing, faith. We shouldn't have a negative connotation about faith. Faith comes by realization and it comes by association. By hearing Shastra and the association of devotees, faith is developed.
So knowledge of Krishna comes from faith and from hearing. But knowledge of the mind and karma comes from the
devotees. It comes from hearing also, but hearing from people who have faith in that. Knowledge of the soul, that we are not our body, is born of the mode of goodness. Knowledge of Brahman is beyond the mode of goodness. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Sochati Na Kanchati. It is beyond the mode of goodness.
Could you give the...
So therefore, Mahaprabhu has told us not to associate with people who are Mayavadis, because they will give us full faith in Maya, in the Mayavadi philosophy. And if we should associate with pure devotees, that's lava matra sarasangai sarvasiri way. Even a short time can plant deep faith in our hearts by Krishna's mercy of a sadhu. This is the glories of associating with a sadhu. But we must cultivate that seed of faith and care for it so meticulously. And if we if we've taken one step to Krishna and somehow have that faith, we should take another step and see how Krishna reciprocates with that. We should not go backwards and not take it cheaply. We should take a step, always take a step to Krishna. And for every step we take, Krishna will take so many steps to us. So what step should we take? That each of us should know what steps we have to take. To take one step to Krishna. It is very individual. But we should know. If we don't know, what one step should I take to Krishna right now? What should be my next step to Krishna? If we don't know, we should find out. Make that our business.
Could you give a kind of a complete definition of this term that we use a lot, fruit or fruto? Because it means, and obviously from what we hear from Bhagavad Gita, it means more than, you know, giving your paycheck. It's a question of
fruit of work.
Fruit of work, or, you know, unattached to the fruit, that term. Because it means more than just, say, the result of our job at work, you know, it seems.
Well, maybe you're thinking of it a different angle than me, but I'm thinking it means everyone works, and no one works. Just like if you advertised in the paper, newspaper, there's a special job opening, but there's no pay.
Yeah, that volunteer work.
Huh? But there's some pay to that. You feel happy or good that you're doing service for someone. But how about a very difficult job, and there's no pay? So no one volunteers, because people think, why waste my energy unless there's something in it for me?
But a fruit of worker means fruit of one means.
He's fruit of about everything. Right, he's fruit of about everything he does. There's nothing he does there's no impetus to act at all, unless he's going to get something from it, some fruit from anything he does. He won't take care of his family unless there's some fruit or pleasure in it for him, or some subtle or gross gain. He won't do anything. He won't have a job. He won't have a car. We work hard to take care of a car because we get the result of the ability to drive here and there. That's the fruit what we're interested in. There's pleasure in the married life. If the pleasure is gone, so everything a person in the mode of passion, this is the symptom of the mode of passion, that makes unlimited desires and longings. He has so many plans, so many desires, and he doesn't do anything unless there is something in it for him. That is a fruit of worker. Not only 9 to 5 that you're pointing out, but there's no action. You can call it a fruit of actor. Maybe that's... There's no action that he does that is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. What's in it for me is... It's everything in everyone's mind. Even though it's subtle and we don't think like that, and we don't think that we're thinking like that, but this is the center of everyone's mind, this false identification of me. This is called ahankar. But we have to, if we want to make advancement, change that around from its perverted sense of I won't do anything unless there's something in it for me, to I won't do anything unless it's pleasing to Krishna. That's real ego. That's purity. That's sweet. That's anyabhilasi kasanya vijnanakama anavita anupalena krishna anashiva anambhakti. That if it doesn't, if it's pleasing to, not pleasing to Krishna, I have no interest to do it. That's exalted consciousness. And it's very secret, that consciousness. It's very secret. And unless you have exalted vision, you don't know who has that consciousness. Hey, where are you going? Huh? Okay, chill out. Question? Yeah.
When you were giving a brief general synopsis of the chapter 3 and that was one, said that the result of the ultimate consciousness of one in chapter 5 would it be shown in chapter 6 by the study of
how to attain that same position? Yes. That's also in the last purport or so in the chapter 5. Or, yeah. So, what's
this? What was your name for that consciousness just?
No, liberation. Remember, how to attain this kind of liberation by focusing on the super soul through Ashtanga Yoga. Through Nishkam Karma Yoga in chapter 5 and through Ashtanga Yoga in chapter 6. Okay, we'll end.